Welcome to the Whistleblower Newsroom. I'm Christina Borgeson.
And I'm Celia Farber.
Today we have a very, very special show, and it's a show about a petition that may become the most important petition ever submitted to a federal court in the history of the United States. It is the first amended petition to report federal crimes concerning 9/11. And the petition is, the purpose of the petition is to present evidence ignored by federal authorities that show that the World Trade Twin Towers, as well as Building 7 of the World Trade Center, collapsed on 9/11 due to the detonation of pre-planned explosives and or incendiaries. Whoa. So, we are truly riding the third rail today, and we're doing this with pleasure. And two very special guests, two lawyers, David R. Meiswinkle, who's a U.S. Army veteran, a retired police officer, a New Jersey criminal defense attorney, and president of the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry, a man who really has all the skill sets necessary to look into this. He is also co-founder of Quantum Matrix Alternative Media, and of the Quantum Matrix radio show, which explores the grave truth about 9/11 and the post-9/11 world, while also revealing viable solutions to the current world problems, which include revealing alternative healing modalities, suppressed energy solutions, suppressed inventions, consciousness-raising modalities, the application of quantum physics and related sciences to changing the current world paradigm. Welcome, David.
Thank you very much.
With David is Bill Jacoby. He's a board member of the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry. He's a retired New York attorney and a member of the board of directors of the 9/11 Truth Action Project. He's worked mostly in management positions in the nonprofit, public, and private sectors. Management experience includes executive director of a community development corporation in East Harlem, president of two renewable energy startups, chief counsel for a municipal community development agency, and director of a rural development project in Peru and Bolivia. Bill, welcome.
Hi, thank you, Christine.
So, you guys, I have to say, I mean, we're just so thrilled to have you on because for the longest time, I'm a big believer in forensic evidence first, forensic evidence and eyewitnesses, and you guys have put together this petition to talk about the forensic evidence and get a court to finally look at it or a grand jury to look at it. Could you talk a little bit about this evidence and how you put it, how you got it together and how you put this petition together, under
sure.
what circumstances?
Yes. A lot of the credit should really go to Architects and Engineers. That's an organization that was started around 2006 by Richard Gage, who's an architect, AIA, from San Francisco area. And when he discovered things that no one knew at that time, he brought it to the attention of other architects, and they looked at it, and they couldn't believe, for example, Building 7, which was not hit by an airplane and went down at free-fall rate for 2.3 seconds. It would be the biggest building in 33 states. It was 610 feet, 47 stories. And when he saw that, heard about that, he couldn't believe it because out in California, they didn't know about that incident. They knew about 9/11. They knew about the towers, but there was another giant tower, too, that was not hit by an airplane. So I guess all of us, we came together because we all had questions about the official story. The official story didn't seem to make any sense. The more you looked into it, the slippery the slope became. And I think all of us, too, had backgrounds in covering, at least for ourselves, events in the past from all the way back to JFK up through other events that have happened where it seemed like the investigation wasn't being properly done. As for myself, as a police officer, initially the first tip-off was that first it didn't look right that these buildings could go down like that. And anyone that actually wants to see those buildings collapse again or be exploded again, they can go on our website, LC4, F-O-R, 911.org, and they can see that. But originally, the firemen and the policemen didn't do what the protocol that they should do. In the first thing in the police academy, you're taught to preserve the scene. And Christina, you've talked about forensic evidence. Well, that metal, the iron, the steel, the dust, that was all evidence that should have been gathered and analyzed properly. And the first thing that they did was, unfortunately, they got rid of the metal. They cut it up and sent it overseas. That can tell you a lot of things as far as the way that the metal is distorted. And we can go into it later as far as the necessary heat to melt steel and things of that nature. And the protocols, too, for firemen is to investigate and test for explosives and accelerants. And in this kind of catastrophe, that would be obvious, but it wasn't done. Why wasn't it done? Well, that's a good question. You'd have to ask people why it wasn't done. I think part of it was they wanted to clear it out real quick for the open Wall Street. That may be one of the interpretations. But it may be that it wasn't done because didn't want it to do it. Again, that would be up to a grand jury to put the connect the dots. You'd have to see who was responsible for ordering the that area, the cleanup of that area. There's different companies involved in that area and what their orders were as far as getting rid of this stuff to find out, too, how much was saved. But that was really important evidence. And from the day one, you can see with the 9/11 Commission and NIST, the National Institute for Standards and Technology, they did not take the most likely hypothesis that would be explosions or controlled demolition into account. All right, they brought up the least likely hypothesis, and that would be fire. Fire has never brought down a high-rise steel-structured building ever before, and not since 9/11. That was the rationale for the official story, is that fire, office fires in the two big towers, and these were both over 1,000 feet tall, like a quarter of a mile tall, these buildings, building one and two, it's north and south tower, that they came down because of the jet fuel that weakened the metal and et cetera, and everything collapsed. Whereas in building seven, there was no airplane that hit it, simple office fires. Just think of that, it's simple office fires, and that brought that building down. And now, it's never happened before and never happened since. Standard of codes, the building codes weren't changed because of it. You would think that it was a failure in the structure of the buildings, that the codes would all been changed, but they weren't. It's because this was an anomaly. And I'll let Bill continue, but I'll be talking too long.
Well, could you talk about what precise evidence is there of the presence of explosives in this situation?
Sure. There are several samples were collected of the dust that fell over all of Manhattan immediately following the destruction of the towers. And the chain of custody has been established for these samples of dust, and they've been evaluated or studied independently by a number of people with specialized in chemistry and physics. And the evidence shows that there are particles of a substance called nanothermite,
yes,
which is blended in with the dust that does not occur naturally and does not normally associate itself with these with the materials that we comprise the Trade Center. There were among these particles, there are some which were fully ignited, some which were not fully ignited, and the provenance of this substance really has been only traced to top secret military labs. So this has not been explained, and it has not been investigated. The position seems to be based on television interviews from people at the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which spent $40 million of our taxpayer money on the study, was that they didn't look for evidence of explosives because it was obvious that there were no explosives. So why bother to investigate for them?
Well, now,
so
what about Niels Harrod? Niels Harrod.
Yes.
Didn't he do an examination of the dust, and didn't he run into some problems as a result?
Well, Niels is one of the scientists that I was just referring to, along with Stephen Jones and others. There are, I think, six authors of the paper that they produced. He has been the victim of a slander campaign in his home country. That's the difficulty that he, I'm aware that he ran into. But he's a professor emeritus from chemistry, and if anyone's heard his lectures on this and describe what he sees in the slides and how you can determine what these substances are, you'll know that his presentation is sound and certainly superior to ad hominem attacks.
It was peer-reviewed, wasn't it?
Yes. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Gentlemen, I just wanted to, this is Celia Farber, I wanted to just, first of all, just thank you so much for what you do. It's incredibly hard work. I imagine it's exhausting, both physically, psychologically, financially, in every other way. And I want to know, the word slander just came up, and this is the go-to method of shooting down people who do this kind of work, and Christina and I are both familiar with this and survivors of this. How do you get around that, like all the things they no doubt will have done to your lives to set you back? I know that's kind of a broad question.
Right now, at this time in history, we have to reflect and think, well, why did it take 19 years to get here? This criminal investigation should have been done from day one. It never was. So for whatever the political context is, it's allowing it to happen. Now, all of us, when you take on the, quote, the official story in whatever area it is, it could be in your wherever you work on a local level, a municipal level, whatever, and you. And this is a show that talks about whistleblowers. So what we're doing is alerting the public to something that, I mean, there was people that wrote books with another theory in 2002. There was a French author and an English author that criticized the official story. But I think that's part and parcel of taking on this the juggernaut here, is that you may have something that comes back at you. And fortunately for us thus far, once we submitted this petition, we submitted in April 10th of last year, and we were up to New York City, and we handed it into the U.S. Attorney's Office. And accompanying us was Bob McElvain. I'm not sure if you know him. He's the father of Bobby McElvain. And,
yes.
And, Bobby was killed, going into the North Tower right in the lobby area. And there was bombs there before the airplanes even hit. But Bob is probably the biggest stalwart of the family members, who was just dedicated to finding the truth out about his son. Anyway, he accompanied us when we presented this to the U.S. attorney, and then we amended it to make it stronger. We added more charges on it, just federal charges, had to do with the federal law criminalizing bombing of places in public use and government facilities, federal law criminalizing acts of terrorism transcending national boundaries, federal law criminalizing providing support to terrorists, and federal law criminalizing the killing of a federal government agent and employee. And that was amended in July 30th, I believe, July 30th of last year. And then on November 7th, we received a letter from the U.S. attorney in the Southern District, where a lot of action is happening. It's Jeffrey Berman. And it was signed also by Michael Ferreira, who was the Chief Terrorism and International Narcotics Unit head. And it was dated November 7th, and it just said it was addressed to us, and we have received and reviewed the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 inquiry submission of April 10th and July 30th, 2018, we will comply with the provisions of 18 U.S.C. 3332 as they relate to your submissions. So that statute has to do with the calling a special grand jury. Now, that is in the presentation of the evidence to it. And so that is actually thrilling. And it was the first time probably a number of us have experienced actually being invited inside the castle and, yes. and all of a sudden establishing credibility for an issue which a lot of people haven't given the proper thought to. So what we're talking about now, and some of us were on it from the beginning, is this is the, of course, the worst crime probably committed against the United States citizens in the history of the country. And there was never a grand jury on it, never a proper investigation of it. And right now, simple things like we talked about evidence, and you mentioned we talked about the nanothermite and the dust samples and the peer-reviewed article that has never been criticized or undermined, as far as I know. But the simple thing sort of in our petition, and if people go on the website, lc4for911.org, they can see the evidence. The evidence is there along with the petition. And one of the exhibits is the statements from 118 firemen that experienced, heard explosions in the buildings. Now, that's an incredible testimony that was never considered by the 9/11 Investigation Committee. You can just imagine that. I'm a former police officer and also an attorney. If I don't have key witnesses to a crime and I don't call them, I mean, what the heck is going on? This is not just one or two. This is 118. And there's people that heard and experienced explosions in the basements. And in those documents, there's seismic reports that indicate that the explosions that happened in the basement prior to the airplane hitting, and then more explosions in the building prior to the building collapsing, which is indicative of controlled demolition being set up in the buildings previously. So it again, I guess it's a long way to answer your question. Of course, there's risk anytime you take on a power, and there's certainly probably and maybe some of the biggest powers in the world here.
Yes.
As far as orchestrating this, and this, we go into what the deep state is and why this was done, and we can see the ramifications and the imperialism of going into the Middle East or whatever and taking out Iraq and weapons of mass destruction, and they didn't have any, killing a million people. Mm-hmm. But before we even go in there, it's just that the fact that you take on these incredible powers is a little bit risky. You're right, 100% risky. And plus, it's not solely acceptable. It's not cool. I work with lots of attorneys, and I worked with the public defender for many years. And, of course, we deal with the Constitution all the time because lots of times we go suppressing motions because of illegal searches and seizures. And here you have the Constitution totally being riddled, and you have it being almost rewritten after that event with the Patriot Act and the Homeland Security, et cetera, and with the spying. And you don't see the attorneys, they're intimidated. I think people are intimidated. There's that factor of the chilling factor that you can lose your job, you can get blackballed, you'll be looked at as a kook or something. But again, the thing that to me is the most, at this point in time, significant is that they have, someone has decided, as I said, to bring us into the castle and to legitimize this petition. They wouldn't invite us in to have that, to and tell us basically they're going to comply with the federal law as we've cited it. And it's a mandatory duty. It's not discretionary under that statute.
Right.
Like, 18 U.S.C. 3332. It's a mandatory. Now, if they don't do it, we have some plans too. The problem, not saying a problem, but it's, and actually it's a good problem in a way because it protects the people that are doing the investigation. Everything is in secret.
Yeah.
So this is a major sea change in the almost 20-year history of this investigation.
If they act in good faith,
that's it is. I'm going to say something because this resonates with me so profoundly, because I don't know, I lost my career, my network career, investigating the crash of TWA Flight 800. And the two key things that were, you know, suppressed were the explosives evidence and the eyewitnesses. And you will recall, you may not know this, but the Sunshine hearing that the National Transportation Safety Board held, no eyewitnesses were allowed to testify. None.
Wow.
And as far as the explosives evidence is concerned, a lot that was completely suppressed. It was explained by a story that they've now backed off on, because I did a documentary called TWA Flight 800 with six whistleblowers, members of the original investigation who actually handled the evidence, including Hank Hughes of the National Transportation Safety Board, who was in charge of reconstructing the interior of the plane. And, you know, like, we talked to this FBI guy who was in charge of testing parts of the airplane, and his, you know, for explosives. And he said they got multiple hits, and it just, you know, a lot of hits both on exterior and interior stuff. And they ended up, he said, well, we finally decided that the machines themselves were not reliable. And then they just stopped testing for explosives altogether, because so much of the, you know, there were so many pieces mm-hmm. coming up hot. And, you know, but nobody obviously knew this. This was not discussed at the Sunshine hearings. And when I read your petition, the hair on the back of my neck stood up, because it's the same thing. The same mm-hmm. thing. And I just, I'm going to say this. Be very careful. This is a federal court. I worry for the jurors. I worry for you. I mean, I know this sounds mm-hmm. like, you know, and your highest reptilian thinking has to be done to thread this needle, I feel.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I'd like to piggyback on that, because I was just looking last night. As I say, great minds think alike. I was listening to presentation by the attorney Daniel Sheehan at our inaugural event when we launched both the Lawyers Committee and the 9/11 Truth Action Project. Danny is an attorney who was one of the lead attorneys in the Pentagon Papers case.
Yes.
Back in the 70s. He was the attorney who won a $10.5 million judgment for Karen Silkwood's family, and he was the attorney who instigated essentially the Iran-Contra investigation. And we were honored when we were launching our organizations to have him give two important addresses. And one of them was advice to the lawyers, to our group, about how to proceed. And sounds like you must have just listened to it last night.
I did. I didn't hear it, but I have lived this and continue to live this.
I see. I think I wanted to underscore just the reality of the situation. As Dave said, we believe our evidence is dispositive. It's much higher than the standard that's needed
yes.
to ask a grand jury to look at this. The statute that Dave read from is also quite unambiguous. But the letter from the U.S. attorney seems unambiguous, but actually is, because he says he will comply with Section 1332, but that's where he stops. So he's operating under the cloak of secrecy that the law gives him regarding grand jury investigations, and that can be a good thing if it's pursued in good faith. But the case that you mentioned about Flight 800, which I remember because when I was young, I lived right on that same spit of land down in the Rockaways, so it kind of struck home when it happened. But that's one of a number of episodes, and Sheehan could recount from personal experience several others. When you mess with matters of quote-unquote national security, the chain of command does come down through the Justice Department, and ultimately the U.S. attorney is an employee of them. And as you say, intimidation can can be used in these situations. So what does this mean for us? It doesn't mean that our efforts are in vain, far from it. It means that we're the point of the lance, but it also means that this is not a spectator sport here where we're just, you know, on your radio show looking for fame and fortune. We really need help and support from the people. We need, in fact, I'm issuing a call to among your listeners, first, that there are any attorneys in the audience. I have to say that the legal profession has not really distinguished itself by rushing to identify itself with our cause. And that's a serious problem for our country, because if lawyers don't stand up for situations like this in which the evidence is dispositive but the authorities' willingness to act on it is in question, then we are in a trouble that we can't necessarily just blame on the authorities. That's one thing. And the second thing is, and Sheehan specifically urged this on us in his presentations at our starting conference, is that we also need to combine these legal efforts with the building of a grassroots organization. Anyone, no matter what they do, if they are alone and isolated, as you experienced in what you've just said, can be steamrolled. We need to, and we are in the process of building a kind of an organization which can resist that, but we really can't do it in isolation. We need people's support. So I hope that your listeners will contact us either through the lawyer's website at LC.
Yeah, can we repeat all the relevant websites slowly so people have time to write
them
down?
Sure. The lawyer's committee's website is LC, lawyer's committee, FOR911.org. That's LC, FOR911. You could read it out as lawyer's committee for 911.org. That's to find out the evidence of 9/11 and to send us comments or questions. The other website that's relevant for building the grassroots organization is 911TAP, truthactionproject.org, 911TAP.org. And that's where we really need folks who want to do just that. Help us build the grassroots organization, build social network networks which can support the lawyers' committee's effort and be there to you know, build the expanding base that this is going to require. Yeah. The two are really very synergistic. We've always felt we needed a legal spearhead to clarify the issues and bring things to the point which actions like this grand jury petition represent to highlight the issues and prepare the ground for action. But we also need to build these support networks and to make people more aware of the political context, and I don't mean Democrat and Republican,
exactly,
in which we live, and
yeah,
and
not
the media context in which we live.
Yeah, speaking
so
of
your work is very important in this, and your listeners' role is very important. None of us can afford to be spectators in this process if we want to triumph. And if we don't triumph, we're in big trouble.
Very good point. Has there been any media coverage of this petition? I mean, mainstream media coverage.
There's been no mainstream media coverage. That's disheartening. With a lot of alternative networks and shows like your own, we've been on a lot of them. We've been on with Richard Gage and Barbara Honecker, too, both of them. And we've done probably did at least 15 of them in a short period of time. But also that, see, this grand jury petition only addresses the evidence at ground zero, basically. This is in New York City,
yes,
the
mm-hmm.
high-rise steel-structured buildings. And this crime day of 9/11 involved a number of crime scenes, including Pennsylvania and Washington. So if the lawyers' committee is to be successful in the sense of we have this grand jury going, at least that's what's been represented in New York City, and we're still doing things around New York City. We have a lot of work to still do, and that's what Bill was saying, that people can contribute. That would help us out a lot, or if they want to get involved. But this is only one of the crime scenes, and we got involved in this, most of us, I think maybe all of us, because 9/11 is, again, multi-tiered crime that happened in different places. so that technically, and someday, they could have a number of grand juries going. The reason that was started in New York, for the most part, is because besides being the most sensational, has the most evidence that was studied. And as I mentioned and referenced at the beginning of your show, architects and engineers, but they're professionals, they're experts, did a lot of the legwork. So what the attorneys are doing or did there was to assemble a lot of the evidence that they had already worked on, right. Made our job a lot easier. But we packaged it and put it in the legal form. With reference to Shanksville and United Flight 93 and American Flight 77, allegedly and with having to do with the Pentagon, there's not been as much work done, nearly as much work. So there's still committees that we'll be doing, and people that are out there may want to have an expertise in those areas. They might have some information in those areas. So besides any help that people can give us on the New York City crimes, we're certainly open, and they can contact us through the website through if they have information or want to help out on other areas, as other crime scene areas.
You know, I want to say something because I know what you guys are up against. I mean, every fiber of my being understands, and there's this thing. This wall among the press, yep. And among people with names who could stand up and support you. And I've been talking about it for forever, ever since this happened, because I had to pierce that with, it took me 17 years to do that documentary, because and to pierce that situation on TWA. But this is even bigger. It's bigger because the consequences have been global, and they've been so globally murderous, you know. And it involves the very, you know, the very structure of leadership of this country and a lot of people who are part of it, and all these agencies, okay, that are paid for by our tax dollars and were supposed to protect us and did not, you know. And I can't explain it. I can't describe it. But I'll just tell you what happened a couple weeks ago. I was listening to Real News Network with Jay Rosen and CIA whistleblower John Kiriakou. Okay, and they were talking about 9/11, and they were talking about, you know, oh yes, you know, getting the Saudis exposing the Saudi connection to 9/11 And then I'm saying this on the air. I'm speaking out of school, but I feel this is so important. And I called Larry Wilkerson, Colonel Wilkerson. Remember him? He was Colin Powell's chief of staff. He was the one. I mean, he feels terrible because he was the one who was supposed to vet Colin Powell's speech that was written, by the way, in the vice president's office. And it was, you know, a speech to the UN about, you know, the bogus WMDs. And it was the lowest point of his life. And anyway, I was first Jay Rosen and Kiriakou. They said, oh, these people who are talking about explosives and Building 7 and so on, I just wish they'd move out of the way and let us get to the bottom of this. And I just thought, WTF? It starts with the forensic evidence. That's where it starts.
Right.
Not with, you know, oh, well, this one was flying over here and this one was, you know, planting bombs or whatever, you know, the paper trail, you know, right. The intelligence paper trail or what. Start with the forensic. So that happened. Then I got in touch with Larry Wilkerson because I know, I mean, everybody is after 9/11, after 9/11, after 9/11. They're always talking about after 9/11.
Right.
They're never talking about 9/11.
Or before
what
9/11.
Happened yeah. before at that time? And so I got in touch with Larry and I said, Larry, I'm going to be interviewing on this my whistleblower show, and Larry was part of a documentary I was doing for Dan Rather that was shut down because I called Cheney's office to verify Larry's account of the vetting of that UN speech. So, and my thing, you know, my show was shut down before it was even completed. And Larry knows that because I was in touch with him afterwards. And, you know, I wanted to bring him on to talk about that. But also I said, Larry, why don't you come on this show that I'm having with these 9/11 guys, these 9/11 lawyers who are talking about the forensic evidence? And he wrote back to me, he goes, oh, I thought you were going to talk about, you know, the case where, you know, of the Saudi, you know, going after the Saudis. Oh, no, I don't want to deal with that because I'm trying to engage people with credibility and power who I'm trying to engage them to get them to look at the forensic evidence and say, okay, maybe there's something here that needs to be looked at. But there's like this, it's this.
Well, they're terrified. It's a kiss of death, they feel, for their.
But it won't be the kiss of death if people hold hands.
You can't, I agree.
That's how I got the TWA
right.
show through and took that
it's
story out of the conspiracy
of the kiss of death,
bin.
Which is the psyop, yeah. The psychological operation that gets into people's heads and people believe it. It's like fearing the monster under the bed instead of just confronting
you know, with this, is both of you have had the experience as whistleblowers. And to me, we could say this is symbolic of the corruption in our system. But this grand jury petition now, an investigation on something that should have been done 19 years ago, at least it started now, is really a litmus test as to the integrity of our government. If we can't finally investigate the murder of 3,000 people properly, then we have a bigger problem maybe than we can even imagine. And this is for the first time it's gotten this close, but we'll have to see what happens if it goes any further.
Let me tell you something. I don't think it's a litmus test. I really don't, because the litmus test has been put out there dozens of times in dozens of cases, and they failed the litmus test. What your thing is an invitation to transformation. That's what it is. It's
right.
Asking everybody to dig down around, find their cojones, and come along. That's what
right.
it is.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but the reason I say it's a litmus test for a national one is because I don't think there was anything at this level. I mean, maybe we could go back to the Kennedy assassination and say the Warren Commission was a litmus test, and it failed, all right? And we've been living under that shadow ever since. So since that time, we've had other things, and maybe you could go into Waco or you can go into Oklahoma bombing.
Exactly,
but,
yeah.
But this, to me, hit everyone in a way that just totally, and just like the Kennedy assassination did. So in my lifetime, I was a young little boy, when that happened, Kennedy, but I'm a man when this happened, and I'm a man who has children. And so this, to me, is a national call. If you can't investigate this, what they quote, the second Pearl Harbor properly, and murder all these people, and look at the evidence where the evidence is there.
The hard evidence. That's the thing. The hard evidence is what you're looking at.
And even though you don't have to be, you know, understand all the science involved, but even if you would, people haven't seen the collapse of those buildings. If they watch the collapse of the two towers, they're exploded. You can see that. And when you realize that the main hypothesis was never considered explosions, even though all the evidence shows, just to a lay person, that it was explosions, you all of a sudden have major questions just from day one. If there is a chilling effect. The problem, part of it is, too, that as control as the media, well, it was back in the Kennedy times, it's far worse now.
Oh, yes, it is.
What is
Except
this?
Except for the alternative. We didn't have an internet, and we didn't have the alternative that you guys offer. So when I say the litmus test, you said, well, a lot of litmus tests. I mean, we have our litmus tests in our life. But for me, this is the test to say whether this society, and again, I'm talking as myself here, not as a lawyers committee right now, right? Because we haven't taken an official position on it. But as far as this system being salvaged in the sense that, you know, we can still work within the system and work with the system. It still has some integrity. If you can't investigate these murders and you have this, as you said, hard evidence now to look at it, and you don't do the job, well, then you would just failed as a government, and then, you know, we have to decide to think where we are. It's not a good thought to think about, and it could take up a whole show too in itself. But that's, to me, that's where we are. We're at the crossroads. All right. Before, maybe we weren't so much at the crossroads. Maybe about the Oklahoma bombing, as I said, or Waco. Maybe we were at the crossroads at the Kennedy assassination, but we didn't know that. We didn't know that, but we know that now.
Right.
We see that all over the world now. We see that we went and killed 1 million people for no reason now. We see that these properly haven't been investigated. The firemen, 118 firemen, haven't been called. That's a major problem. If we have seismic reports to show there's explosions in the building prior, that's a problem.
Right.
If we have collapses, that the explanation is office fires, and it takes 1,800 degrees to start to melt steel. I mean 2,800 degrees. I'm sorry, 2,800 degrees to melt steel, and the hottest the office fire can get with gasoline from a plane is 1,800. You're missing another 1,000 degrees.
Yeah, if you have rivers of molten steel after, you know, a couple weeks after this thing has occurred, you have a problem.
But the problem, too, is that most people don't know that. They've moved off it because everything is reaction in this society. You know that. You can't. The technology's changed so fast. You go from, I mean, when I was doing, and you ladies have talked about whistleblowing, when I was a whistleblowing cop one time, and we started a local newspaper, Taxpayers Defense Association, New Brunswick Reporter. And we started that before there was a word processor. And people weren't using computers and stuff like that. We were laying it out in a print room. And so things have changed so much. Now people have iPhones and they have all kinds of communication. But everything changes. But the one thing it doesn't change is as people aren't reflecting and not, like, looking back and trying to freeze that moment and analyze it. It seems like they've lost their third eye as far as the ability to analyze and get insights into these important issues.
Well, there's
so
a...
forgive me. Sorry, continue.
No, that's only the reason I said, to me, this is a litmus. I know we've all gone through our own litmus test, but to me, this is like, I guess personally, if we can't resolve this, then what, you know, it's almost like you got to wash your hands of the whole thing, you know, and just say, my God.
Well,
you know,
I want to ask about the block. You're an average, a patriotic American out there. You're vaguely aware that there are these groups protesting this. What's the big block, the big blinder that causes people to just say, I can't look at this?
Yeah, I'd like to speak to that. If I may, on the board of the Truth Action Project, we have a couple of psychologists, and their overview of 9/11 is that it was primarily a psyop. It was a psychological operation, and it's similar to psyops we've conducted in other countries. And this is my observation, not the board's, but you can see similar things going on in Venezuela right now. And then you can see them in the past. That's end of editorial. But a psyop is something which is based upon probably valid research, or at least sinister but valid research into the human mind. I've always been struck by, since I first saw the evidence of controlled demolition, that although you and Dave are absolutely right, things should begin with the forensics and the evident science that's demonstrated in the what we've discussed. A lot of human action is not based on that. We are constantly being influenced by propaganda in a variety of ways, and our government has spent a lot of money and resource on learning how to do these kinds of things. And literature on it is extensive. So we do think that certainly, and among the people who've researched this, they've come to several main areas of findings. One is that we're afraid of being isolated. It's the emperor has no clothes phenomenon. That's a very real psychological principle. And as you alluded to earlier, the way to get around that is to have a few people start laughing, and then all of a sudden the crowd does. Mm. So we could be reaching a tipping point that way if we work at it. But we have to recognize that these psychological operations work on the non-rational parts of our brain, and they are very powerful. And we all make decisions all the time on non-rational bases. And there wouldn't be an advertising industry if non-rational persuasion didn't work. So we just need to be very akin to that. And in TAP, we're looking at several of these different levers. The one is to encourage the rise of alternative media, like what you're doing. Yeah. The more people shift to alternative media and move away from the traditional media, the more the power of the latter is going to be weakened. At the level of propaganda and psyops, people have to be made more aware of how it works and how pervasive it is, and to see the patterns. It seems to me that a lot of the progress that's being made about 9/11 awareness is actually extrinsic to the 9/11 event itself, because we are seeing so many other parallel manifestations of propaganda that it's hard to it's becoming possible to simply put 9/11 on a list of things that have happened since 9/11 and then reason back. We're part of an academic group that's international in nature that's looking at
concepts like deep state
all of a sudden you can say deep state, nobody's gonna laugh at you.
There's still some people who will frown and scoff, but not many.
Let me ask you something. Let's talk about the culprits. Who are the culprits? You can name individuals or name agencies or name areas of culprits or whatever, but I'm interested in talking about the culprits for a minute.
What we're doing as the Lawyers Committee, because that's fraught with some dangers, as you started mentioning names, and I think earlier in the show somebody mentioned about slander, things of that nature, because we're dealing with very powerful people. We have done a lot of talking about that within the Lawyers Committee and how we're going to handle that. And we are handling it. So there will be, something that will be made public shortly in reference to that. There is, of course, in categories is a much easier to talk about. And government agencies, like if we talked about the nanothermite, we might say that as fact that there are certain agencies in this country that are involved with nanothermite, like Redstone Arsenal or Lawrence Livermore or Los Alamos or the Naval Surface Warfare Center and things of that nature. So that would might be give a start. When you start talking about private corporations and individuals, that's something you may want to do in secret with the U.S. attorney and with the grand jury. We may want to do that. And maybe, we're in the process of doing that. Or if you want to lay out areas, general areas, like contractors, people that had work in the buildings, maybe asbestos removal, or doing some painting inside, or doing some wiring inside, or doing elevator work inside, or maybe people that had security, the security companies involved, and key people in the security companies, things of that nature. So, or in the cleanup, the various cleanup companies that were involved and things of that nature, or the people that made money off of the Wall Street by betting these put options that the prices or the values of certain corporations are going to collapse. You may use that as a general area and guide them. So what we're willing to say on television or radio or anywhere publicly right now is cautioned with the fact that there are things that we will present to the U.S. attorney, and hopefully he will present to the grand jury, that we will not be telling the public because it's secret, supposedly, and it's to protect certainly the grand jurors and to protect ourselves in a way.
That totally makes sense.
And to protect the witnesses, and to protect the witnesses themselves.
Exactly,
certainly
protect the witnesses.
The contracts that Dave was mentioning
there's
don't apply that everyone associated with those contracts.
There's two levels there.
Wait.
I'm sorry.
Okay, wait, finish, David, and then what did you say, Bill?
Okay, we'll finish, David.
No, we're just saying that there's two levels of presentation. And one would be the safer route in the sense where you list general areas and allow people to start to connect the dots. So if I say companies that had contracts in the buildings, okay, we'll go look at the companies, all right, instead of us saying this company and let them, you know, and all of a sudden they're looked at. We call that people with material information. And it's not necessarily to say that they did anything. It's just to say that they should be, they may have information that might help solve the crime or connect one of these dots. And then there's another presentation to be made, it could be made, to the U.S. attorney, which would actually name the names. And I think that's what you're interested in. That's what everybody's interested in. And that's what we're interested in, too. All right, so that to ask that question, as we mentioned there, there's some secrecy involved here, and as Bill pointed out, not just to the grand jurors and to us, but also to the witnesses there, that they could sort of be kept in that way at this time anyway.
Okay. Bill, you were saying?
I'd like to add, Dave said most of what I was going to say, but another point would be one reason we took this route of seeking a grand jury is that as a private group, we don't have subpoena power. And it's much as we might like to or be tempted to play the role of the public prosecutor and finger the guilty, we're not really empowered to do that. We would not want to indict someone without having gone through a process of subpoenaing people, getting them to testify on under oath, following a chain of inquiries, as all prosecutors do, from low level to high level. We wouldn't it wouldn't be right for a prosecutor to shoot from the hip. So we took this route because the grand jury, supported by the U.S. attorney, does have access to the petition. Subpoena power. We've asked them. We've told them that we're willing to be to help and assist in that process, but we don't have the legal right to do that. And one reason we've taken that route is because it costs money to do the kind of investigative work that would involve subpoenas and interviewing of witnesses extensively. Not that we haven't done any, we have done some, but it's another area in which support from the community for our work is important.
But what expertise would the grand jury
have so we could do it better?
What expertise would the grand jury have to know who to subpoena, what to investigate, et cetera? Who directs that? How does that work?
Well, they could. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, we are available to communicate, and we'll be communicating in general terms. Areas that we suggest they should pursue. The resource that they have is the office of the U.S. Attorney itself, who has a staff of investigators and prosecutors and legal authority to compel testimony. So we can assist in such process, and we've offered it. But the legal power to do this is rests between the U.S. attorney who can prosecute and the grand jury, which has the power to order an investigation and ultimately the decisive power to indict.
Well, I would keep a close eye out for any containment efforts on behalf of the attorney's office. I mean, trust but verify, whatever, but, you know.
What we've done is,
and that's why we said earlier
them,
that we need
in our writing our letter to them,
to get
we
to
told
that
them that we'd be willing
support.
To
so
come
that.
In and make presentations. And also, we're hoping that we could bring in some people from architects and engineers, some of these experts. I mean, we can give them the experts or some of the experts. And if the grand jury looks at those exhibits, they can tell the U.S. attorney, hey, we want to talk to Nils Harris. We want to talk to Stephen Jones. We want to talk to Kevin Ryan. Bring them in. And they can subpoena them and bring them in. And they will be mentioned by us as people. I mean, we would talk about, I mean, there's no thought about it, any kind of defamation or slander kind of thing when we talk about these fellows, because these fellows are people that can help solve the crime in the sense of they've done the work. They've done the forensic studies. Say so. Those are the people we name names like that in a petition already, and then we go. Well, we go even more beyond that, of course, to make it a more thorough presentation.
But you know, make sure. Of course, you probably already know this. Make sure you document. Okay, we only have 2 minutes left, but make sure you document who's doing what in the attorney's office.
Well, here's the thing.
Make sure you do that.
If there comes a time when we think they're not acting in good faith, we have prepared and we're ready to go with the action. It's called the mandamus action, which goes into court and it asks the judge to command or order the U.S. attorney to present the evidence that we've asked him to present to do the job he's supposed to do. All right, that hasn't come that there yet. I mean, that may happen at some time, and hopefully it doesn't, because then we'll have a belief that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Oh, keep an eye on that judge, too.
Right, and let's just make sure people remember our email address.
Yeah, let's repeat the websites one last time, if we could, websites and email addresses.
I suspect that people in your listening audience, some of them have information and have been afraid to come forward. Our websites are LCF, as in Frank, OR911.org. And for the grassroots organizing effort, it's 911T, as in Thomas, A, P, as in Peter, .org. So we look forward to hearing from you. And as I say, the investigative aspect of this requires resources that we still don't have. So anyone who'd care to contribute is most encouraged to do so.
Well, we're going to close the show. Celia and I always close the show by telling our guests that we love and respect them for what they're doing, but because nobody else wants to do it, or very few. But it sounds to me like you're building something big here, and congratulations for getting this grand jury to take a look at it.
Huge triumph.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having us on the show and airing this issue, a very important issue. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and we hope you'll come back again and keep us updated. We're most interested.
We certainly do, and we will be having other things to report on, so that's quite a good possibility.
Okay, let us know.
Right.
All right, take care.
Right,
bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye.